As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Tony Football Show.
Today, FA Cup. From Manchester to Maidstone, a round that brought the biggest against the odd result in almost half a century as Antony scores a goal. We'll report on that and Man City getting 1-2 at Spurs and the miracle of Maidstone, sixth tier in the fifth round. Plus, Klopp stop. Who, why, how, what? We'll get stuck into the new succession drama and the toughest shoes to fill in football in this Totally Football Show. Monday, 29th of January. Thank you so much for joining us, listener. We've got with us today Daniel Story from The Eye. Hello, Daniel.
Good morning, James.
Good morning to you. Tim Spears is here from The Athletic.
Hi, James.
And it's a big welcome back to Luis Miguel Echegaray from ESPN.
Jimbo!
Woo! Wow. What a great day to have such a great team assemble, because it's been a significant weekend, eh? I mean, you went to the Hawthorns, Tim.
Yeah, I had the most significant weekend of my personal season.
Did you?
But I don't think that's what you're referring to.
No, I mean, I'm referring to all of it, because you had the West Brom Wolves game, you had Maidstone, you had Klopp. We'll get onto that later. James Pearce will be on the line to give us a little insight, hopefully, into the club's thinking going forward and that. But hey, yeah, that West Brom Wolves game, what was that like there at Hawthorns?
Sort of difficult to get your head around because, you know, I've never seen anything like that at a football stadium.
So what did you see?
Riot police storming the pitch while the game was sort of still going on. and trouble happening at all ends, at all areas of the stadium. It felt out of control for 5 or 10 minutes. It looked impossible that the game was going to finish.
Right.
It wasn't just a couple of troublemakers here. There were dozens and dozens of people trying to get on the pitch and cause harm to others. I've got to say, you know, I thought the police did a fantastic job of keeping it calm and ultimately getting the game finished in what was a very eerie atmosphere.
The trouble began quite late on in the game?
Yeah, I mean, it had been brewing. I mean, so the police asked that this game kick off at 11:45 in the morning to try and stop this. But of course, you know, you're never going to stop idiots getting drunk and want to cause trouble. So I think someone was telling me a lot of the pubs in Wolverhampton just opened at 5 a.m. instead of 7 a.m.
Wow.
So, you know, and you could just tell from some of the behaviour of some people that they were absolutely out of their heads, you know. So yeah, it had been brewing all afternoon. There had been things thrown at players and, you know, the fans are spitting at each other before kickoff, and it's just, it's a nasty derby, James.
Why is it so nasty? Do Villa have the same kind of issues on the occasion?
Oh yeah, we were actually playing, Villa fans were playing a drinking game to see at what point during the game will they say, you know, SH on the Villa during that game. It can be contentious for sure. I've been to a few Villa West Brom games. I've never seen Villa Wolves or the other way around. But yes, just like Tim says, it's definitely one of those rivalries, the trifecta of anger within the West Midlands, for sure.
All right. Wow. Anyway, the game did get finished and Wolves got their first win at West Brom in a long time.
Yeah, that's it. Well, that's it. It took the shine off it, you know, completely. Like I said, the last sort of 12 minutes of the game, plus the 2 minutes of stoppage time they added on just to get the game done. It was played like a pre-season friendly type atmosphere, really. I think everyone was just like, what was all that about?
Like, what was all that about?
You know, this is ridiculous. But yeah, at the end of the day, first win for Wolves at the Hawthorn since 1996. Woo. So it's been a long time coming.
Indeed so.
I think that's a point to remember as well. Obviously, we can get into the violent side and how horrific it was. And fair play to the referee, by the way, who told the coaches, look, I think we need to get the players off the pitch in order to calm things down, which I think was a good move. But, I mean, Pedro Neto, just what an unbelievable player. 10 involvement goals now, and he's been injured for so long. And Cunha as well. I thought it's been tremendous from Gary Neil's Wolves so far, given the, you know, the magnitude of the game as well.
Absolutely. All right, well, plenty happening. In the fourth round, you had Jurgen Klopp's first game since Friday's dramatic announcement and a 5-2 win for Liverpool against Norwich. He had a scare for Manchester United and that long-awaited goal for Antony in their 4-2 win against Newport County. Daniel was there. Man City finally winning at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. You had big victories for Bournemouth and Leicester. And at Portman Road, the biggest FA Cup upset in almost half a century. Ipswich 1, Maidstone 2.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
It's rocked out of possession. Reynolds has it, and he's got Korn breaking down the middle. Sam Korn is in on goal here! Just incredible! Maidstone have done it again! Sam Korn has done it again! Three rounds in a row!
Stones go rolling on. A. Daniel's story, sixth tier Maidstone, the first team from outside the top five tiers to reach the last 16 since Blythe Spartans back in 77-78. Wow!
Yeah, and I mean, look, it had all the ingredients of that kind of, you know, I know we sort of talk about cliched magic, but when you watch Ipswich have 38 shots and Maidstone have two and score them both and win 2-1, you are sort of invested in, I could watch stoppage time for 45 minutes and Ipswich is just not going to score. The goalkeeper kind of made some really good saves, but there was nothing miraculous about the saves. It was just sort of bodies on the line. There was that incredible goalmouth scramble where he sort of dives on the ball after in between about four players' legs. And it was like, yeah, even at that point, you think, yeah, I know what happens here. I've seen it. And Ipswich fans, Ipswich players, Kieran McKenna all seemed to kind of fall into that trap of, we know how this goes. We can see that this is all horribly weighted against us. But an extraordinary achievement for Maidstone. I think it's interesting in the age of, you know, elite club money and massive inequalities that these stories are actually more commonplace than they ever were. We had Lincoln getting to the quarterfinals from non-league not that long ago. I think it speaks to the sort of rise of professionalism of those teams directly below the EFL and the narrowing gap between sixth tier and fourth tier. And, you know, Maidstone, I went to see them before their third round game thinking this is a nice story to cover. And then obviously I went two rounds too early at least. But, you know, they are a semi-professional club, but they train in the mornings rather than the evenings. They pay players a reasonable salary to maintain that professionalism. They don't think this is luck. They clearly had barrel loads of it on Saturday lunchtime, but they genuinely do believe, and in the manager George Ellacoba, they have a man who every time he speaks you're kind of further invested in them achieving everything they want to, because he's such an inspirational figure.
Absolutely. Viewers on our YouTube channel will have just seen your cat's tail making an appearance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the door behind you swung open as the cat.
He's a Maidstone fan.
Yeah, possibly so. You've got, let's have some top George Ellacoba facts.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I wanted to piggyback from what you said, Dan, because Ellacoba is the story here as well. An immigrant from Cameroon at 16 years old, started his playing career at Dulwich Hamlet, obviously a Wolves cult hero. And this is his first managerial job. It's amazing. And the fact that, you know, he goes, speaks to the fans before kickoff and then speaks after them. He's just such a good story. It's Ted Lasso-esque. And funnily enough...
No, go on.
Ted Lasso, during the seasons, obviously needs... some choreographed matches as AFC Richmond play during the Championship or the Premier League. And they obviously need former professional players or players that can do the business and be the opponent in these scenes. Yep. Ellacoba is one of them.
He's one of them.
Yes.
All right. Are there any other former kind of Premier League stars who are in there?
Jay Bothroyd, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll try and remember some others. But Ellacoba, you know, just for the purpose of this narrative, is one of them as well.
Of course, Lewis, you're one of those figures who... straddles the divide between football and film.
Yes,
from
yes.
Your your movie debut, Zombie Vampire Killers.
I wish it was Zombie Vampire Killers. You know very well, James Richardson, that it's Mutant Chronicles.
Mutant Chronicles. But in Italy, it was released as Zombie
at the back of the DVD store, the only one left in Italy. Yeah.
Daniel, you've had a big season for following underdog stories, you know, heading off to the Faroes to do Klaksvík and that. Maidstone, having been down there, etc., how enormous is what they're doing?
Well, it's huge in terms of establishing a sustainable future. Maidstone have managed, you know, their story is one of Football League extinction because of bankruptcy and mismanagement, and a kind of long, long road back, both to having their own ground and to having owners in place who experienced those times. One of them was a season ticket holder at that time. And they've just seemingly used this pretty horrific experience over a period of 30 years to try and create a football club and a community asset that basically one aim is to stop that ever happening again. And there is a ceiling on that. They were relegated from the National League Premier last year. They are not in the automatic position in the National League South because Torquay United having a great season and they're on the way back. And that level is littered with clubs that have basically been, at a point in their time, managed into the ground or screwed over by someone or something. And that just gives you 10 times much joy for it. I think it was £400,000 they would make before they won at Ipswich. I mean, that's the difference between them being able to be sustainable for the next 5-10 years and not. And obviously we should enjoy this for the moment and enjoy it for the FA Cup run in its own context because it's beautiful. But it does set them up for the next 10 years. And he spoke to supporters before even the third round when they were making serious money out of it. And they were saying, yeah, we are able to straddle those two things. We're able to view this as a beautiful thing in isolation and also realise that this potentially sets us up to do the same thing. It potentially sets us up to try and get in the Football League in the next 5-6 years. So, yeah, all power to them. I mean, it is a story without, you know, without a downside.
Who've they got in the fifth round?
Well, I was literally just going to say this. They've got Coventry or Sheffield Wednesday away, right, which is they deserve better than that.
Yeah, they were disappointed when they were disappointed,
rightly so. You know, just a big Premier League team away or just anyone at home to give them a better chance to get through. And we've got to shout out Lamar Reynolds for that goal. I instantly thought, do you remember Ramirez at Barcelona in the Champions League semi-final? Because they were very under the cosh, but I think Chelsea had 2 shots, 2 goals maybe that day. And that was their first sort of shot from nowhere. But the calmness and composure. Yeah. It was his first goal of the season, you know. He's played 26 games.
Yeah.
And that's his first goal. It was so cool.
Yeah, tremendous. Brazilian goalkeeper Lucas Covelin as well, by the way. Amazing. He was scoring in the National League playoff, 3 years ago? I mean, he had a good performance as well. And that emotion, everything that you guys are transmitting about Maidstone just proves. But yeah, I wish in the next round they had been playing at home. I think that would
end of February. We'll see in the next week or two who they're going to be facing. But yeah, end of February, next chapter in this extraordinary story. The other big potential underdog tale of the weekend was Newport County welcoming Manchester United and Daniel Storey to Rodney Parade. Daniel, you went along. Were you stood on the scaffolding? Where did you actually? It was an interesting scenario for this match.
Yeah, it was. The press box is. I mean, it's literally 3 or 4 wooden desks. So we were sort of spread along the back of the stand, sitting next to Newport supporters, mainly families. I think it was a kind of ticketed section rather than season ticket. But you were very much in amongst it, and it was It was almost a better cup tie for Manchester United taking the lead because it really deflated Rodney Parade. They'd had this kind of whipped up this massive storm before the game. They are another club who went bankrupt, were expelled from the league. This week, they've just got a new takeover. They were owned by the Supporters Trust and the money was basically running out. It was impossible to find sustainability. They've just been taken over by Hugh Jenkins, who oversaw Swansea's rise from, you know, the lower reaches of the Football League up to the Premier League. So there was already the sense of occasion and this kind of start of a new era feel. And they were being whipped up before the game. And then obviously United scored 2 really, really good goals. Basically mirror images of the other, overloading on the flanks, laying the ball back into the penalty area and someone slashing home a shot. And then, yeah, Manchester United, really. They just completely lost all energy, lost all intensity. Newport, I don't actually think, played particularly well. But they just did enough to keep themselves in the game. And At 2-2, there was a period of about 10 minutes where I think 90% of the people in the ground thought Newport are going to win this if they carry on. And yeah, there was no grandstand finish. United were all over them for the last 15 minutes, scored once. Anthony got his goal. Well done. And then they sort of finished the game off in injury time again, just as you wanted that last push. But it was a brilliant, brilliant cup tie.
All right. Disappointment for the exiles then. A term which could soon be applying to Marcus Rashford in that Man United squad, if the Sancho precedent is anything to go by. Remarkable events last week where Rashford was twice depicted out celebrated with one of his former teammates in Northern Ireland. Late on Thursday night in a Belfast nightclub, Friday morning, doesn't turn up for training, says that he's unwell. Ten Hag saying it's an internal matter and he'll deal with it. But what's going on there?
Yeah, well, you know, we've all been there. Thursday's the new Friday. but he's a bit more high profile than we are. I mean, it's not good. It's not the first time that there's been an incident with Rashford or a number of players in this Man United squad.
But Rashford specifically had an amazing season last time. This time has struggled to find that kind of form. It seems there's a little bit of... Am I reaching to say there's a disaffection there as well?
I don't think you are. And it seems like last season looks like more of a flash in the pan than ever, really, which is such a shame for a player of such promise, of such intelligence, that, you know, where's his career going?
Is there anything in Manchester United that isn't internal right now, that isn't an internal meeting, that isn't an internal issue that they're... Because, yes, I think Marcus Rashford, clearly, if the reports obviously continue to surface and him being out, it's not a great look. And as you mentioned, he was great last season. Now it's back and forth. But then when you add the Jadon Sancho situation, how much are we now placing, blame's the wrong word, but emphasis on what Erik ten Hag is doing or maybe not doing? I wonder, is there a cultural, and I know that we'll talk about other managers later on, but I'm just wondering, like, is the way that he manages an issue? Here. I guess it's just a blank question because this isn't just about Rashford. It's also about certain things going on internally, as they're saying it, that are perhaps being pointed at the fact that, is Erik ten Hag the best man manager out there, specifically for United, specifically in this Ineos, Jim Ratcliffe kind of turnover moment?
A question they may well be asking themselves. Daniel?
In Rashford's defence, I went to Lavery's a few months ago in Belfast, and it is the greatest sports bar in the world, I think. So it is probably one of those places where someone says, look, there is another game on in a minute, shall we stay for a couple more?
But then he was ill after, right? So that's, yeah. Is that...
Yeah, maybe that's a slight on the food.
All right, well, a story that will no doubt run and run as the Sancho business did before. Man United in the fifth round, having conquered Rodney Parry, will be travelling to either Bristol City or Nottingham Forest after their 0-0 draw, Daniel. Can you sum that up for us in a word?
Yes.
Okay. Tim, we've talked about your West Brom Wolves experience. Wolves will be visiting Brighton next.
Home to Brighton.
Oh, you're going to be home to Brighton. All right. Brighton looking pretty tasty this weekend. A 5-2 victory at Sheffield United with João Pedro scoring a hat-trick. Woof.
Yes.
To quote Daniel, yes. All right. Included his 9th and 10th penalties of the season. Good Lord. He has converted more spot kicks than any other player in Europe's top five leagues, because such a dangerous player. His name figuring highly among the transfer talk as the window heads towards its conclusion this Thursday night, I think. Yeah. Anyway, Tim, you were just saying we're going to be talking about... Oh, sorry, it was actually you, Lewis. You were saying we've been talking about other managers, and of course we'll be talking about that one, the one who's now moving on at the end of the season, next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Liverpool, everybody. Friday morning, Jurgen Klopp announcing that he's stepping down at the club come the end of the season. Caught pretty much everyone by surprise. 2 days later, at Anfield, his side hosting Norwich. You'll never walk alone, ringing out Klopp there on the bench, much of the crowd choking back the tears. Just extraordinary scenes. James Pearce of The Athletic was at Anfield, and he joins us now. James, first of all, you were at Sunday's first appearance of Jurgen since Friday's dramatic announcement. What was the atmosphere like at Anfield?
Yeah, incredibly emotional. It was a strange one, because certainly early on in the afternoon, it was pretty sombre. I think everyone I spoke to around the ground was still shell-shocked, really. Still trying to process Friday's news that Klopp would be going at the end of the season. And everyone wanted to leave him in absolutely no doubt about where he stands in their affections. I think you could see what it meant to Klopp, the ovation he got when he emerged from the tunnel, the fans chanting his name over and over. So, yeah, I think there was sadness, but also appreciation. And also, I think, a collective feeling of, right, we need to do our bit in terms of ensuring this reign gets the dream finale.
Absolutely. Well, they certainly did their bit against Norwich. Kind of a classic Liverpool-Norwich scoreline, 5-2. Any thoughts on the performance of the team?
Do you know what? I think in the circumstances, it was very, very professional, because I think that was always the fear. I think it was the fear for Klopp and his staff that, because of what had happened a couple of days before and all the noise around it and focus on Klopp, that it would be a distraction. And he is, you know, Klopp said himself on Friday, I honestly believe the best memories are still to come. And he's desperate to, I know he's spoken to the players about squeezing every last drop out of their time together. And of course, Norwich at home wasn't the most toughest of tests, but it was a pretty good start in terms of focus, because Liverpool were in control from start to finish. And again, another day when the academy products really stepped up and delivered. James McConnell outstanding on his full debut. Connor Bradley, the young Northern Ireland international, just goes from strength to strength at right back, and same with Jarrell Kwanza at centre half. And it's, I think it was also just a reminder about the wealth of talent that the new manager will inherit in May, because you also had a situation where you're bringing on Trent Alexander-Arnold, Dominic Szoboszlai and Andy Robertson after their injury break. So the squad is looking very strong.
In your excellent piece at theathletic.com, breaking down how this has all come about, you mentioned that the club has actually known since November. So what are their plans? What direction are they taking regarding the new manager?
Yeah, it was November when Klopp first made the phone call to Mike Gordon, the FSG president. And then I think the passage of time since then is, well, one, the owners hoped he might have a change of heart. And then two, that time has been used in terms of data approach, really, with crunching the numbers and seeing who might fit the bill stylistically. So there has been a lot of work going on in the background over the last few months. Will Spearman, as Liverpool's director of research, data actually played a big part in Klopp's appointment in 2015. Of course, he was already a household name, but it was the numbers backed that up, if you want. And the numbers also at the time showed that Dortmund had actually, the underlying numbers were a lot more impressive than results had been in that difficult last season that Klopp had there. So that will certainly play a part. I think that what having the news out in the open now does is it means Liverpool are free to contact clubs, agents, possible successors, and actually work on a shortlist and exactly who they want, because that was always the fear, I think, from the ownership side of things, that they just couldn't do that. They couldn't step up that search whilst it was such a big secret that Klopp would be going at the end of the season, because, you know, if the news had leaked out, I think it would have been a really bad look if they were looking around for other candidates. And of course, Klopp, you know, his desire, why it was put out there in the public domain last Friday, was he wanted it out there on his terms. He wanted to be the one to tell the players and to tell the fans.
All right. Well, it's a long process and, of course, an incredibly delicate moment in the club's future. But what I really want is a clickbait soundbite about who's going to be the next Liverpool manager. Who have you got, James?
Well, you probably won't be too surprised to hear the name would be Xabi Alonso, just because I think when you look at the potential candidates, he ticks a lot of boxes for me. I know it's still a relatively small body of work at Bayer Leverkusen, but he's done an incredible job there so far. And he's also got that emotional tie with Liverpool. He was adored by the fans as a player. Of course, he was part of that iconic Champions League winning team in 2005. So, you know, there's others in the mix. I'd say De Zerbi commands a bit of respect as well with what he's done at Brighton. I know Liverpool admire what Thomas Frank has done at Brentford. But yeah, as we sit here now, if I was going for one, it would have to be Alonso.
All right. And do you get the sense that that's the club's desire too?
No, do you know what? Not from the people I've spoken to so far. I mean, if it is, they're keeping their cards incredibly close to their chest because, you know, from the people I've spoken to at various levels, they are adamant that they have a clear mind and they don't have one person at the top of a list that they are about to put a phone call into, that they are still doing their due diligence. They're still doing their homework in terms of who's going to fit the bill stylistically, because I think that's really important, the brand of football someone to play, and also being able to handle a job of this magnitude, because, you know, the scrutiny and pressure and expectation is so different to life at so many other football clubs. I think of course Alonso's CV means that he will be in the mix, but I certainly wouldn't say at this minute that I think it's some kind of done deal.
James Pearce there. Well, no question that this is going to be a very hard act for whoever comes after Klopp to follow. Jürgen, I think pretty much most people's, everyone's lifetime is the greatest Liverpool manager that we've seen, no? And not just on the field, Luis.
Well, I mean, obviously, when you look at the history of Liverpool Football Club and Paisley and Shankly and Dalglish, you know, he's going to be part of that agenda. He's won every domestic competition, the Champions League final three times, won it once, of course. But I think when we talk about Jurgen Klopp, it's more than the data, it's more than the analysis, it's more than the trophies. I love this sport because it brings something out of you from an emotional perspective, from a community-driven perspective. And I'm not the only one, obviously. And I think that's exactly why Jurgen Klopp got that reception against Norwich and why he will continue to get that reception, because Jurgen Klopp, the Premier League, is better with managers like Jurgen Klopp in it. He cares about the city of Liverpool. He cares about the fans. He cares when moments are tough and when moments are good. And you see it almost every time he interacts with a fan or when he's talking about tough times during COVID, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why he will be missed. So in terms of replacing him, we can talk about tactical similarities and differences from the De Zerbis to the Alonsos. But to replicate what he did for Liverpool as a human being, it will never happen.
Okay. Funny enough, there were two German managers in this game, and Jurgen Klopp actually defeating his best man, the best man at his wedding.
Yeah, is that one of the first times that's happened, where a manager has defeated his best man?
Producer Charlie, and probably Daniel, you remember this. Producer Charlie citing the analogous situation in the 99 League One playoff final, Man City against Gillingham, and the man who essentially saved Man City in that game with key goal, Paul Dickov, scored it against the Gillingham keeper, Vince Bartram, who was actually best man at Dickov's wedding.
Well, it's not over till the final whistle, and City here looking for an opening. It's Dickov again! Can you believe it? Denied once by his
Just remarkable. Just remarkable. I think that's the big story.
The best man derby.
Yeah, the best man derby. So, Tim, Daniel, your take on this. What do we think about the impact on Liverpool for the rest of this season? Also, the impact on current players there and potential or players who might have been potentially Liverpool assets.
I think that the fact that the players invest so much in him and get so much from him and embody him means that it's going to be, one, very emotional, and two, I think that will help them. You know, they rely so much on energy and momentum. We've seen that time and again. And I can see them winning at least a couple of trophies now, and I think that will be great for Klopp's legacy, because he hasn't won enough trophies. Obviously, Man City are the reason why. And in any other era of the Premier League, they would have won a lot more. But, you know, in 30 years' time, we'll just see the number of Premier Leagues he won. And if it's just one, that doesn't do justice to what he's sort of created, I think. So it's going to be a long, slow goodbye. And that's going to be nauseating for a lot of people. And I did see a few tweets yesterday saying they were very grateful for the 34-minute delay in the Wolves-West Brom game, because it cut down on the coverage. So, you know, obviously we get that. But I think a lot of people, myself included, would be happy to see, love to see Klopp win one more title.
All right, a lot of people would have different emotions. Of course, only one Premier League win, but it was the Premier League title. Daniel, I think the line from your piece on this on the Eye was, he is the man who put Liverpool back on their perch.
Yeah, he is. And that presents a huge problem or a huge dilemma for Liverpool going forward, because in this managerial search, they've effectively got two options, because Lewis is right, they cannot replace the kind of magnitude of the persona and the connection. So what Klopp did is he took over a team who were 10th in the league when Brendan Rodgers was sacked, and he built that up. He had a mandate to forge all those reconnections and to build something special over a long period of time doing it. Liverpool are a different beast now. They've finished, you know, they've won a title recently, they've won a Champions League recently, they've been in title races. The huge question is whether they go for another builder and accept that there will be a drop in performance for 1, 2, maybe even 3 years, or whether they feel the club is now in a position, because of Klopp, that they need a finisher, they need a personality manager, they need a manager who, whether it's through tactical acumen or through force of personality, is going to finish Liverpool, is going to complete the era that Klopp believes he started, and all evidence suggests that's true. That's a huge question, because there aren't obvious, you know, there is one obvious manager in Xabi Alonso, but let's face it, that's only because Bayer Leverkusen having a really good season and he used to play for Liverpool. That's not because anything else. And if you go down the route of, well, it's because he played for Liverpool and therefore there can be a connection there, Lewis is right. Well, that's fine, but you can't replace the connection that Klopp did, and trying to do would be a fool's errand. That's a really, really difficult bit. In the back of my mind when I first heard it, my initial reaction, which is probably completely wrong, but my initial reaction was, I wonder if, however this season pans out, if that managerial search is difficult, I wonder if Klopp stays on. It's not unheard of for a dynastical manager in the Premier League, aka Alex Ferguson, to say, look, I think I'm knackered, I think I'm going to leave. Wow. And then the club find it very difficult to replace him, and then Ferguson stayed on for a while. I don't know, but I just think it's a really, really, really hard appointment. And lots of people talking about succession planning and, oh, Liverpool have got months to think about it now. That can be a good thing, but it can also be a really difficult thing, because if you decide now that you want Xabi Alonso and then Bayer Leverkusen stutter over the second half of the season and there's a slightly negative inflection on that and Liverpool have won the league, and it's really hard to manage that. And yeah, I do not envy them one bit.
Yeah.
They will have worked out Klopp. You know, they will have talked about the announcement at this timing, whether it's because it was leaking or Klopp just wanted the news out there. But they are presented with a really, really difficult situation.
Yeah, Fenway Sports Group's biggest conundrum right now is trying to replicate the passion and the euphoria of what Klopp has done and at the same time continue to be competitive. Mm. That is extremely difficult. Xabi Alonso, by nature, I echo everybody's sentiments, does seem like the best fit. But from a tactical perspective, he's actually not. Because Bayer Leverkusen are more patient, they are more possession-centric, and they're more calm on the pitch than any kind of gegenpressing Jurgen Klopp has ever given. So that's one to think about. Then you talk about, you mentioned Thomas Frank, Roberto De Servi, Postecoglou. Now you're bringing that sort of emotive, emotionally driven, in your face, we're going to really solidify that midfield kind of philosophy. But it comes also with obstacles, because again, you're kind of weirdly trying to echo what Klopp did, and that's not a good idea. So yes, I agree with Daniel. This is a very difficult, one of the toughest gigs to try and replace. But it's a good one because it's a blank canvas, right?
Oh, I think it's toughest shoes to fill ever.
Possibly. And we've seen with Fergie and Wenger how difficult it is to, when an era ends, what do you do? Do you start again? Do you go with your assistant? And we, of course, know that that's one thing that's not happening because Pep Linders is going to leave to pursue his own managerial career, which suggests that he hasn't got a shot of getting the Liverpool job, which is interesting in itself because that does suggest...
Because Klopp, I think... He was of the opinion that maybe was who should step up.
He was hoping for it.
That would be an initial thought that would come to my mind that in terms of the not unique style of play, but distinctive style of play that Liverpool have, it would be the easiest way to keep it going would to be with his assistant. You know, we talk about personality that can't be replicated, but at least in terms of tactics and style.
And that would fit very much in with the Liverpool tradition as well. And that,
it would, yeah. Mm. Yeah. But obviously that's not a route that they're going to go down, which itself is very interesting.
The other thing that has happened with Ferguson and Wenger is that inadvertently, rather than deliberately, but there's been a sacrificial lamb manager, at least one, who has come in and had to deal with a huge amount of noise and difficulties, and both very good managers, but neither of them succeeded in Emery and Moyes. There is an argument, I think, now for almost aiming for that, for saying, let's just have a steadying manager.
A burner.
Who isn't going to be here. Well, who isn't going to be here in 5 years' time, probably not even 3 years' time, but let's have another look at Xabi Alonso, for example, for a season. Let's have a look at our shortlist of five. Let's see how they do. Let's let them know that we want them in a year's time, in 18 months' time, and see how they get on managing the preparation element of that. It's so much harder than anyone thinks. And I suspect part of the emotion, let's be honest here, is not just because Klopp's leaving, but because Liverpool fans, they get that. They get that this is... potentially an era ending, not just a manager.
Yeah, either. Thoughts with you, Liverpool supporter, at this difficult time. Of course, Liverpool still in contention for four trophies. The 5-2 win against Norwich means they'll be hosting either Watford or Southampton in the fifth round. Those two teams drawing 1-1 at Vicarage Road on Sunday. Liverpool also have Chelsea midweek in the Premier League. We'll touch on the Premier League midweek games a little bit later on, but Liverpool not the only big club out looking for a replacement manager from June, which may even complicate their search because Xavi, after Klopp's announcement, said that he too will be stepping down from the Catalan Giants. Things not working out too well for them at the moment. They've dropped to fourth in La Liga, beaten 5-3 at home to Villarreal at the weekend, and some Xavi goals that they conceded there.
That's the biggest amount of goals they've conceded in La Liga since the 60s. I believe that's how big it was. And it has been a continuous theme with Barcelona, this just conceding so many goals in those top four or five teams in La Liga. I believe they've conceded 29 goals, which is like way more than Real Madrid, still more than Girona as well, who are up there amazingly. So, you know, Xavi was like, hold my beer, Jurgen Klopp. I'm gonna quit now. And it is surprising and it isn't, because there have been reports about some discontent within the dressing room. Perhaps Xavi, who immediately talked to Joan Laporta and the directors right after that loss, told him something that he was already thinking about for a while now. But when you look at the record of what he has done since he has arrived, 122 matches in charge in all competitions. He's won 75, drew 21, and only lost 26. Mm. So when I think about the Xavi exit, I'm actually thinking about the overall Barcelona plan, which we all know since Messi's departure has just been economically an absolute mess. You know, we haven't heard the terms levers, as much as we did in the last year. But so it's not just about Xavi, this situation. Defensively, they're a mess. They need to figure themselves out. They're relying too much on young players from La Masia. But this is a castle that needs way more fortitude than just the head coach and the manager.
Absolutely. We'll be talking more about Barcelona, the situation there, and more about Xavi Alonso, actually, after the events of this weekend, post the Jurgen Klopp announcement. Bundesliga leaders Bayer Leverkusen dropping points and allowing Bayern Munich to creep back to just 2 points behind them. We'll talk more about that with Rafa, with Alvaro, with James and Julien in the Tuesday European Totally Football Show. I can assure you that those guys are completely focused on the football this weekend. Next up, we'll touch on one or two more of the FA Cup fourth round results. Apologies, not quite the fullest of roundups because other things, but that's up next.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Elsewhere in the fourth round of the FA Cup, events kicked off on Thursday with Bournemouth's whopping 5-0 win against Swansea. The Cherries next up will face Championship leaders Leicester, who swept Birmingham aside 3-0. Friday saw, as we mentioned earlier, Man City scoring their first ever goal at and getting their first win at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. 1-0 almost didn't happen as well. It was late, so late before Nathan Aki finally earned them the win. They, in the fifth round, will be visiting Luton after the Hatters beat Everton 2-1 again. There's going to be replays, meanwhile. We mentioned Bristol City and Nottingham Forest. Replay-hating Nuno Espirito Santo facing another game for the second round in a row. Same deal for the Robins as well, actually. Also heading to a replay, Sheffield Wednesday Coventry, who drew 1-1. Chelsea and Villa, who only managed a goalless draw in a pretty uneventful one, Luis.
Aside from the 6,000 Villa fans who made some noise.
Yeah, all right. Very nice. Leeds and Plymouth Argyle, that was 1-1, and so was Watford and Southampton. Anything you want to touch on from that lot? Luton's thrilling victory at Goodison, perhaps? Or
I mean, it sounded like normality returning to Goodison Park. It's very familiar. Booze at half and full time. It's been a good, you know, fortnight or 4 weeks at least since we had that. This was also the day I found out that Tim Krul plays for Luton.
Yes.
Which I didn't notice until the Jack Harrison's shot squirmed underneath him. And oh, Krul, there he is.
There you go. It's the second 2-1 victory they've had this season at Goodison Park. Their next encounter is going to be at Kenilworth Road, and it's going to be in the first week of May. Oh, my word. Currently, these two teams are 17th and 18th, only 1 point apart. That game at the first week of May could be oh so significant, because who knows what point situations we may have had between now and then, with further penalties perhaps heading the Toffees' way. Daniel, did you want to comment on that, or Man City's 1-0 win at Spurs, or literally anything else? Or perhaps, hey, we haven't mentioned Newcastle beating Fulham 2-0 at Craven Cottage.
Yeah, just on City. I mean, we said a couple of months ago when they were creaking after that 1-0 defeat at Villa that followed the bizarre 3-3 draw at home to Spurs and the draws against Liverpool and Chelsea. And at that point, City had fallen to third or in fourth in the league. They have now won 7 games in a row. Their next four games were against Burnley, Brentford, Everton and Copenhagen in the Champions League. It does feel like City are hitting that start of a year. We're going to show you how silly it was to ever doubt that we'd win at least two competitions, probably more vibe. The 3-2 win at Newcastle recently was chaotic, but that's two of the only three goals they've conceded in that seven-game run. They look really solid. They're dominating games. Yeah, it does feel a little bit, oh yes, we've been here before.
And Erling Haaland's coming back.
Mm. Ooh, Spurs got James Maddison back, yeah, which is nice. Yeah, although unless they win the Premier League, their trophyless run will extend now to 17 years, Tottenham Hotspur. All right, well, other things are happening and have been happening this weekend, like AFCON. We're midway through the last 16. We'll touch on that with Ivory Coast bound Daniel's story next.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Away from the FA Cup, what else has been going on in the wide world of football? Asian Cup. Last 16 is currently underway. You had Australia beating Indonesia 4-0 yesterday. And dramatically, Tajikistan beating the United Arab Emirates on penalties. Tim, you're looking at me like you're either wanting to say something or praying I don't ask you about Tajikistan.
Ask me about Tajikistan. Just do it. Yeah, let's nice. See where we go. No, yeah. I wrote a piece on South Korea the other day. They're having very interesting tournament. Conceded six goals in three games. Having a bit of a crisis. They've drawn with Jordan and Malaysia.
Mm.
And, you know, for a team that's got players from Spurs and Bayern Munich and lots of other PSG, they should be doing a lot better than that. So, yeah, the eye is on Jürgen Klinsmann, who came into the tournament sort of not very popular anyway. Some awful results when he first got appointed, and he doesn't live in South Korea, which is not the done thing because their previous managers have all made the move, but instead he sent his assistants to go and watch games in South Korea. So, yeah, they're in trouble. And
Saudi Arabia on Tuesday.
They got Saudi Arabia, although if they had won the group, they would have had Japan because Japan stuttered in their group as well. So, as it turns out, they would have had a difficult game either way. But now they face Saudi Arabia. And
Who
beat the world champions. And then if they do get through that, they probably get Australia in the quarters. Ooh. So they've got a hard run now.
Okay. Japan, who a lot of people also had down as, you know, strong contenders pre-tournament in the last 16. They've had a wobble as well, but they're up against Bahrain, who you feel may not be progressing further in the competition. Also, should say Monday, may have already happened by the time you hear this, listener, the hosts and defending champions, Qatar, will be facing Palestine, who've made the knockout stages for the first time ever amid the appalling events back home. Now, elsewhere, we've got the final on Monday, the final FA Cup fourth round fixture. That's Wrexham travelling to Championship side Blackburn. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, a round of Premier League matches. Now, a short time ago, I mentioned Africa Cup of Nations, where we're in the last 16. And Monday night, it's Monday night, isn't it? That hosts against holders one, Daniel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's Monday evening, Senegal, Ivory Coast at 8 p.m.
What a game.
UK time and Ivory Coast time. Yeah, it's been a bizarre start to the knockout stages. We've had four red cards. Egypt, the only banker at AFCON is that an Egypt knockout tie will go to penalties, and it did go to penalties. It went to the goalkeepers taking penalties because they got to the 10th set and Egypt had a man sent off, so it was goalkeeper against goalkeeper. Egypt's goalkeeper, it looked an awful penalty, and it was a bad penalty because it missed the target, but it actually hit the bar and then kind of flew into the stand. And then, yeah, DRC go through. And there's a really refreshing feel to the fourth quarterfinalists so far. Nigeria, who stuttered early in the groups and then beat Ivory Coast and topped that group. Angola, who are this fascinating story because five of the normal starting 11 play for Petro de Luanda in Angola, who were suspended for match fixing in September. So they haven't had much football. Yeah, and then DRC are through. And Guinea won the Guinea derby by beating Equatorial Guinea. And yeah, just kind of littered with red cards, littered with silliness. If you want to watch the most entertaining 45 minutes of football this weekend, watch the first half of Angola-Namibia, because Angola have a man sent off, the goalkeeper sent off, having Magalang outside the area. They then take the lead. Then Namibia have a man sent off, and then Angola double their lead with their only two shots of the half and eventually win 3-0. Yeah, they are a really interesting story, but it is refreshing to have those names. Morocco are the only North African team left and are the favourites. And it is, you know, it is now looking like one of Morocco or Senegal with this kind of group of plucky underdogs plus the usually underperforming Nigeria who seem to have got their stuff together.
All right. You're heading out Tuesday morning, by which time that Senegal-Ivory Coast game will have taken place. What are you most looking forward to for when you get there, Daniel?
Well, I think my first game is going to be the Nigeria quarterfinal in Abidjan. I think we're then going to go up to either Yamoussoukro or Bouaké for another quarterfinal, and then there is a semi-final, third, fourth and final all in Abidjan where we're staying. So I think I should get five games in about 11 days. So not much to go wrong there.
Brilliant. All right. Well, it's been an outstanding AFCON so far. Look forward to hearing from you, perhaps, from Le Côte d'Ivoire. Full range of Premier League fixtures, which you'll be missing out on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Is it round 22 of the season? 22?
Feels about that way.
Yeah.
It?
It's the right. Repeat of
early
the...
Early 20s. Opener, right? Yeah. Yeah. Repeat of the opening weekend of the season. What happened back then, Luis? Can you remember? Yeah. Can you remember?
Yes, Aston Villa got demolished. 5-1.
They did. Yeah. And 5-1 against Newcastle.
Yeah. Tyrone Mings' injury, obviously. Pau Torres' debut. There was a lot going on. But yes, they were humbled, Villa, definitely, against Newcastle United.
There was... What else happened? Oh, Wolves, you had that oh-so-controversial game at Old Trafford when Onana came out. And punched. Who was it he punched?
It was Kalajic, I think. Or Dawson. It was a combination of the two.
Really?
Yeah, he just took a few out.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a bad start for another. But he's had a quiet season since. No other big...
Yeah, that's it. And Wolves have had no other VAR issues. So.
Daniel, what was your opening day of the season? It's funny to look back and how wrong we were with our opening round takeaways.
Yeah, although Forest defended quite badly and lost to Arsenal, so,
bingo.
You know, it's still pointing a turning world and all that.
Well, Nottingham Forest hosting Arsenal this time around, which is a fixture which usually goes pretty well for Forest.
Yeah, it was the game at the end of last season that confirmed Forest's survival as well, and officially won Manchester City the title. So, yeah, same as, please.
Yeah, is it? I think it two no 3 years in a row, is it that?
Yeah, so we beat them twice in the FA Cup, obviously as a Championship side. It wasn't quite 3 years in a row, but it's three fixtures in a row at home, and then the one to end last season, in which Arsenal were looking pretty knackered. The league had pretty much gone. It will be a completely different situation. Forest have got one of their players back from AFCON, but. Still got four or five away, so yes, it'll be a test.
It's the first one with Nuno, right, as well, since
the first time that they'll be playing this fixture with Nuno.
And they obviously beat Manchester United in the league at home, so there is a kind of platform there. He kind of used the Steve Cooper playbook to get that one. Arsenal will be better than Manchester United, where I would bet everything you can see behind you.
and there is a lot. Tuesday, that game will be taking place also on Tuesday, and most of these games are going to be live on TNT and Discovery Plus. There's Fulham Everton, who disappointed against Luton, but they've got a terrific away record. Only Liverpool and Man City have won more away games than the Toffees this season.
The Iwobi derby without Iwobi.
Oh, yeah, fair. Okay. Luton-Brighton, will it be a third 0-0 in a row for the Seagulls in the Premier League after their terrific performance in the Cup? Luis, you're nodding. You think it will?
Probably. Sometimes when Brighton play well midweek and then a few days later they play away, they drop off a little bit. Not to completely discredit them, but that's usually what happens. I wouldn't be surprised if it was another.
And Kenilworth Road, a tough place to go.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
tough place to go. Crystal Palace host Sheffield United. One win in 10 for Palace, Tim, and pressure building.
Yeah, one win in 10, two in 16, and they're 5 points off the drop. And Sheffield United at home, and then Brighton away on Saturday, the big derby. And yeah, pressure is building. And the longer this goes on, you're kind of like, yeah, this was the wrong decision. And I feel like we could potentially be witnessing the end of...
Do you think we could be seeing another Friday announcement stepping down?
I wouldn't be surprised. There's growing discontent. More in a lack of direction, really. I mean, what, they're out of the cup. They'll probably stay up, but they're going nowhere in the league. and the manager's going to, it's just a case of when he retires, not if. So, right. You know, you want to see some belief and some hope and some future, right? And I guess they don't
have kind of turnaround that we've seen at Aston Villa, who used to be in those kind of, well, at best doldrums, but drama for a lot of the years you've been following them.
Yes, Luis. Jimbo, but, you know, Unai Emery never now draw scoreless, and now we've had two on the trot. So,
oh, okay. Well, you got Newcastle on Tuesday.
Redemption time, baby.
Okay. They've had four defeats in a row in the Premier League, Newcastle.
Something's got to give, isn't it, Jimbo? Now, it should be an interesting fixture, definitely at Villa Park. I think definitely the boys and Unai Emery will think back about that opening game of the season and want to rectify a few things, even though both lineups are very different. Heading into this one.
Unai Emery's side, by the way, following that goalless draw with Chelsea, still yet to concede a goal in 2024. Madness. I mean, it's probably only been like, what, three games?
Yeah, it hasn't been that many.
Fair enough.
But the home record has been amazing. It's still undefeated since February of last year. Of course. So, you know, still going.
Okay. Newcastle, the latest visitors to try their luck. That's Tuesday. Wednesday, Man City Burnley, which says to me there's probably a crazy aggregate score stat. Man City Burnley, do you know this one, Daniel?
It will be loads versus not very many.
Correct.
But this is, you know, this is basically 4 months on from everybody assuming that Vincent Kompany was being
groomed,
groomed into the Manchester City hierarchy. And this season he has struggled. Burnley have suddenly started giving up possession and playing without the ball and playing like a relegation struggler, which is a good thing, but not necessarily a Vincent Kompany thing. And after the Klopp news this weekend, Guardiola certainly intimated that he is not one for walking away just yet. I suspect that gave him a private celebration, but a celebration nonetheless, because he has seen off the kind of the other pillar of Premier League management as it stands. And he kind of joked, well, if we're relegated because of financial punishments, I'm more likely to stay than not. But he isn't. He will be very, very happy that he gets a kind of, what he will see as a sort of chance to have a clear shot on next season.
Okay. Producer Charlie has finished counting them. Last 12 meetings, all been victories for Man City. Aggregate score of 43 goals for Man City and one for the Clarets.
Who scored the one? That's the
question. I don't know. That's what I wanted to know.
Robbie Brady.
Brady. There you go. There you go. Of course.
Mm. Spurs take on Brentford on Wednesday. They drew a blank against City, but they do score in the Premier League. 34 matches and counting now in league football. Very good. And then there's Liverpool-Chelsea, which is good. Well, no.
So boring, this really? Game. In the league? Well, it's been a draw like the last seven times.
The last seven, yeah.
This one probably won't be because the game that I saw Villa at Chelsea for the FA Cup, it was the best I've seen Chelsea play this season under Pochettino. Mm. I think they're beginning to understand the tactical acumen that's required by the Argentinian, you know, the high press, time press, and obviously go wide, you know, get Madueke on one side or whoever, Mudrik, and then so against Liverpool should be an interesting affair, especially since this is the first Premier League game since Jurgen Klopp's announcement. So there should be some fiery notes. So I'm hoping for a high-scoring game. If it is a draw, it is a draw.
Yeah, they were high-scoring a week ago with Ben Chilwell's return looking like a key thing for a lot of
people. Definitely looking
better,
yeah.
But midweek against Villa?
Well, I mean, they were better in the first half and then Villa got better as the game developed. Mm. But it was definitely the best I've seen them play on the pitch. And they've been undefeated at Stamford Bridge since October. So
is that right?
Yeah, in all competitions. So it's not... You know, there are some hidden stats that show that Pochettino is doing something. All they need is one or two more players, Jimbo.
He has reached a Carabao Cup final in which he will be, to your delight, taking on Liverpool. Very good. Anybody want to say anything about Liverpool and Chelsea? Or shall I throw at you the Thursday fixtures, which are Wolves Man United again and West Ham Bournemouth on what is transfer deadline day? Tim?
Yeah, transfer deadline day. Well, there's not much going on, really. It's very quiet.
Well, maybe.
Who's going to loan who? You know, that's the question this week.
What about Wolves Man United? Ravengi?
Yeah, I guess so. We're a cup team now, Jimbo.
Are you?
Yeah. We're concentrating on the cup.
All right, then.
Thursday, by the way, is also Inter Miami's part of their preseason global tour against Cristiano Ronaldo's Al Nassr.
Yeah, except that this is in Shenzhen.
It's in Riyadh.
Is it?
Yeah. They're not going to China. They're going. This is a global tour that is going all over the place. It started in El Salvador, back to Dallas. Then they're going to Saudi Arabia, which is where this game is played.
Okay, right.
Then Japan.
Japan.
And then then Hong Kong, then Japan, and then
good to get
back
that
to Miami.
Cleared up, yeah. And, but this meeting of, you know, the two potentially greatest ever, is it actually happening? Because I thought it was, yeah?
Yeah, well, Ronaldo injured himself during Al Nassr's tour in China, meaning that game or those games couldn't happen. There was uproar.
Oh, so that was the Shenzhen thing?
Chinese fans obviously outside the hotel being pretty mad about it. And Ronaldo had to publicly speak about his apologies for this. So there is a question mark whether he will even play this game. I mean, it's all obviously,
you know. It's in Riyadh. He'll play as a hologram. He'll be on that pitch.
Now that I would love to see.
Yeah. I really should have been more up to speed on that whole story. Could you just say El Salvador again?
El Salvador.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. All right, Daniel, are you all packed?
I have a day off tomorrow, so I am having haircut, dentist, lunch out, packing.
Put the cat away. The cat needs to be put away.
Oh, yeah. Who's taking care of the cat? Partner.
The cat you witness is the man of the house for the next 2 weeks.
Nice. Excellent. We're going to be back, Tuesday with the Euro show, and then Thursday looking at what's happened so far around the world, and especially in those midweek Premier League games. So do join us for that if you would like to. For now, many, many thanks, Luis, for coming in.
Thank you, Jimbo.
Thank you, Tim.
Cheers, James.
For being here. And Daniel, bon voyage.
Thank
you. Look forward to speaking to you from Africa. Listener, thank you for being with us. And producer Charlie and Liam in the booth. We'll catch up with you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.